Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., a.k.a. the man in the van. Yes, he lives. He is still here. He lives in sunny South Florida, where today it was a high of 87 and hot as Hades. And I say that because I have a guest today that is living in something that is not that. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I present to you Chad from Canada.
Hey. Thanks, Marvin.
So kind of chilly up there today, huh?
In Fahrenheit, it is 26 degrees. If I look at the humidity, though, I can relate. We have humidity that's close. It's in the high 70s right now.
Okay, ours was 84. Or I should say it's 84 now, and it's night.
The humidity, like that cold, it just seeps into your bones.
Yes.
It's something else.
Yes, it does. All right. And I had to say the word Chad in that manner. And I need to add on the phrase hanging Chad, because while the rest of the world is done with elections, here in Florida, we are still going like the Energizer Bunny.
You guys, you know, the thing is about you, about Americans, is that, you know, you guys do some interesting things, you do some great things, and, you know, you do some scary things once in a while. But lately, I've been hearing all this talk about hanging chads, and I've been getting very concerned. I do like Florida, but if you guys are, you know, into hanging chads down there, I don't know that I should come down for the next while.
Now, you can come down after it's all said and done. That, you know, we forget and forgive, we move on. Until the next election.
Until the next time.
Yeah. All right. So, folks, I wanted to, well, I didn't really want to. Chad and I, you know, actually, you know, chat from time to time. We send emails back and forth and had a couple of stories come up that I'm like, hey, why don't we share these on the air? And it'll be a nice topic that we normally do not talk about on here. And so said, yeah, we can do that. So before we get started, I do want to say that while we do not have a sponsor for the show, folks, I do want you to take time now and support our podcast. Support Podnuts, the network, and you can actually support this show, Podnuts Pro, by going to the show note. And on every show, if we talk about a product or a service that is on the Amazon, I will have a link in the show note that you can click on and purchase that normally like you always do through Amazon, same price, but a little bit will come back to me so that I can put back into the show. And I'm just asking you to do that for me. Nothing special. I know you guys are on Amazon all the time. Just buy stuff through there, support Podnuts Pro, and we'll have some, I think as Chad would say, some generally good shows every now and then.
Oh, I'm not going to live that one down, am I?
No.
Listen, in my defense, I want to say that when I publicly put that out there, I meant it's generally good because most of the time it is, but once in a while, some crazy things happen, you know, and just like hanging chads, Florida's a great place, but there's some crazy things.
Yeah, well, hey, that's my life. I'm a wild and crazy guy. All right. So let's, why don't we just go to the main thing that I had spoken with you about that I said, oh, I got a story to tell you. And then you can respond with some stuff here. So years ago, when you were trying to, what's the best word to describe what we were doing on that show? You were trying to discredit me as a tech.
In hindsight, it was a good time, but hindsight is 2020.
So at the time, I was not using the Datto product, which I have several now. And I wanted to update you and let you know that I had obviously some reluctant clients in the beginning, one of which was very reluctant, but it was a law firm that was already spending a ton of money on doing their backup, and they were only backing up to the cloud. And they had a junior on site who was always complaining about how long it took to download and restore a backup. And when you think about that, normally people don't have to do restorations all the time. I mean, right. If it's once a month, that's a lot. This customer was downloading and restoring almost daily because Either people moved folders, deleted folders, something, whatever happened, but they were having to do a lot of restoration. So when it got to the point that they were spending $500 for a single location, $500 for a second location, I kind of told them, hey, why don't we use this new service I got for you, Datto? It's a local backup and a cloud backup. It's all automatic. And oh, by the way, if there's ever really an issue with the server, I can virtualize the backup and you'll be up and running in no time. Oh, that's too much money. Oh, rah, 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 rah. Well, to make a long story short, they actually end up switching to the Datto. They didn't go full board with the Cirrus, which was the model I wanted. They went with the previous Alto, which worked fine for them for a couple of years. Just recently, I got alerted from my rep that they had an upgrade credit that we could use to purchase a new unit. And it was a nice credit. A nice credit. And so they were like, oh, yeah, why wouldn't we do that? Because basically it was either do the upgrade or lose a warranty.
Right.
Which, I mean, no big deal. The service still works. They would still have their, but if there's ever an issue, you have no warranty. You upgrade, you get a credit, and you get a 5-year warranty.
Yep.
So I upgraded them to the Cirrus.
Terrific.
And wouldn't you know it, less than 1 month after we upgraded to the Cirrus, one of their servers went down.
Oh, the timing. That's some timing.
And what do you know? I went, tried to get it back up. No joy. Server was like 9 years old. I've been telling him to upgrade it, replace it. Nah, nah, nah. And of course, it had critical stuff on it.
Of course.
And when I say critical, email attachments that were tied to their case management system.
Oh. That's going to hurt. That would hurt.
So I switched over to the virtual server. And the funny thing is, they've been running on that for 2 weeks. Because it took them a week to make a decision on getting the new server. So I finally got the new server, just installed it this past weekend, and we're getting stuff replicated over, and we're actually doing something where we're combining another server function into that. But I just had to say to the firm administrator, you realize how lucky you were that we just did this, because if we had the old system, we probably could have virtualized it. But because the firm is so big and so many people hit that server, it probably would not have had the performance as it would have with the Cirrus model that we got.
That's terrific. And now are they believers? Can you be able to use them as a reference?
Absolutely.
That's right there what it is, and that's how it was for us. It started out same sort of thing. The objections are there, but our good client base, we don't really have a problem because we just don't give them an option. But I deal with that in new clients when we're trying to land new business.
Right.
But I'll share a story with you. It could go off on a tangent, so just pull me back if I start going.
Okay.
This customer bought a new server last November, and it's a fairly nice server. It's a Lenovo ThinkSystem SR550, 128 gigs of RAM, couple of processors. All SSDs for the storage, internal storage, and runs 4 VMs. Well, we got this in and we migrated their stuff off the old one. The old one, it wasn't that the old one was way out of warranty. We're pretty religious about the 5-year replacement cycle, especially with this client. The problem was that the old one was spec'd for capacity that should have been there because it's a fairly stable company. We ended up with all these sort of, oh, and we need to do this. And it ended up doing way more than it should have. So it was really starved for resources.
Right.
So we get this new server up. And we had this nightmare, like months and months of problems. And then we thought it was fixed. And then it ran for 5 months. And then it had more problems. And it took almost a month to resolve. Now, both times that happened, we ran their entire environment off their Sears. And as far as the customer was concerned, there was just maintenance being done. But we ended up having, even though we're a Lenovo warranty center, we had our authorized service provider, we ended up sending out the Lenovo people because we were replacing everything and the server was just a nightmare. It was killing our numbers, to be honest with you. So we sent him out. He didn't know what was wrong with it. He ended up replacing every part in the entire server because we couldn't get a replacement on the server because of the timing. So that's where, like I said, I'll leave that alone. But suffice it to say, this customer, we ran their entire environment off of the Cirrus, and they were none the wiser. Now, one thing I'll say, now that you finally got this customer on Cirrus, I'll have to tell you about my new greatest thing, and that is the X platform for the Cirrus, the all SSD models.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we've now got, internally, we actually run one of those. The testing we've done, if you're virtualized, you can actually fail over and use the compute power of your hosts and the storage of that the Cirrus, and it can handle almost any load because there's no spinning drives. But I have many stories of just like that one, but similar. You mentioned getting a new server in a week. Depending on the specs you want, that's a bit of a pipe dream. A lot of the servers these days have been taking 5-6 weeks by the time all the parts come in. So you could find yourself in a situation where you're running for an extended period.
Well, it was funny because, I mean, normally when I spec out my servers, I only will spec what's in stock.
Okay.
Now, it takes me, you know, an hour or so to actually spec out the server, check what's in stock and do all that, get them the quote over there. In this particular case, I had it spec'd. I had the quote over to them in, I think it was day two.
Okay.
And then it took them another day to look it over and say, yep, go ahead and do it. When I went to place the order, everything went through fine. Here's the catch. So it was going to be a 2016 server.
Yep.
But one of the things we were going to do with this is they have an internal SharePoint company webpage that they use.
Okay.
So the junior that was there loaded it up on the SharePoint Foundation.
Okay.
So the free version, which... Yep. For what they're doing, no big deal.
Okay.
So I have a SQL person that's taking care of all that, and she lets me know that, oh, well, you can't run SharePoint anymore on, you know, above 2012.
Oh.
And so she's like, so, and I'm thinking, okay, so I could have virtualized. And I said, you know, but for this, I'll just do the 2012 downgrade. Okay. So there is a SKU for 2012 downgrade on this server. So I still buy the 2016 and it cost me like $35 it was $15.11 to get the 2012 downgrade media.
Okay.
So I order it. And like 2 days later, I get a email saying that, oh, this is only available as a CTO option.
Oh,
so for those of you that don't know what that is, that means it's a configure to order, which means you actually buy different SKU parts and it's, you know, configured by the manufacturer or whatever. I buy all my parts just straight out. I'll build it. I'll do whatever. So they didn't tell me I couldn't get it. I just had to go direct to the vendor to get it. And that's why it took an extra week to get the server.
The problems I've been having with parts, it's really like I can get 99% of it. But for example, we have a workstation on order right now, a P920 Lenovo ThinkStation. And the Gold Series processors, the Xeon processors that it takes, they took 7 weeks to get the processors. A workstation's not any good without processors.
Wow.
And we've had the same problem with hard drives and the servers, with being realistic about cost, if we're going to deal with SSDs, there's only a couple models and, you know, it's, yeah. So that I'm just saying though, I have the confidence though to run it for a month if I needed to, as long as it's sized appropriately.
Right.
And that's where the Alto, although the Alto is an amazing tool for file based recovery and even restoring the whole server, it's not so great for that local virtualization.
Right. So the Alto model is really just your baseline. Hey, you've got backup and we can do a bare metal restore if we have to.
you can also restore to virtualization. We've used them a bunch of times to go from physical servers into VMware and into Hyper-V.
Okay.
Either or. And there, in my opinion, there is no simpler way of doing a file restore than the Dotto interface. So if you have an Alto in place and you're doing those basic file restores, it works great. Right. They have a time and they have a place. Local virtualization is just not it.
Right. So let's go ahead and take a left turn. So when you and I first started talking about Dotto, of course, one of the things was, well, most techs always say, well, I can do a backup solution cheaper. Mm-hmm. I can buy Shadow Protect myself, get my own hardware, and I can do all that. Now, my perspective is, yes, I can do that. Yes, I could probably make more money, but that means I have to worry about it.
It's true. Now, there is a caveat to that. I still think you should worry about the backups regardless of who they are, and I'm not saying you don't. But for example, even though the Dotto does daily screenshot backups verification, for anyone who doesn't know, it takes a backup, it'll boot up on the Dotto, it'll actually take a screenshot showing you it running, mm-hmm. and it'll email to you. And the updates they did in June of this year at DottoCon, they released the ability to check if your DNS service is running,
yep.
check if your Active Directory service is running. It can do a lot. You can even script things where it can open a program, test something, take a screenshot of that, and send it to you.
Yes.
The thing is, I still feel better if we do test restores on our stuff. So depending on the client's needs, depending on the contract, a lot of things, we test usually quarterly, sometimes monthly. But the bigger thing is actually from a supportability standpoint and training. I can get the most junior tech, the most green person, I even get my office staff trained on how to do restores. And if anyone's ever used, StorageCraft's a great product. We used to use that before Dotto. I wouldn't let anybody but my more intermediate or senior techs touch it. It's just, there's too many places you can literally click and cause disaster. With the Dotto, when you mount a restore, it's read-only. Mm-hmm. You're not going to damage your backup. I mean, you literally have to click delete and then type in, I would like to delete all yes. local and cloud backup data before it'll do it. So I feel a lot more comfortable and I sleep a lot better having that there. And we actually use Dotto to fail back outside of business hours. They back up some of my larger clients. They can call in direct and get support if they're down at 3 a.m. and their IT team wants to get them back up.
That is true. I've got a couple of juniors that I give them access to the stuff. I have the reports go to them. So I don't have to worry about it. But what I was going to say about that is if there is an issue, I just either call or send an email to Dotto tech support.
And chat. Don't forget about the chat now. The chat works really good,
the chat,
too.
Yeah. And you know what? They'll go in and take care of it. Now, 100%. Granted, now, I'm not saying that I turn over everything. I will go in and I'll look through the knowledge base myself because I, a lot of those things are probably fixes that I can do. But I also know that if there is a major issue and a backup isn't working or something like that, and a lot of times there is corruption in the back that, I'll get a response back and they said, oh, yeah, this was done. I cleared it out. You're good to go.
Exactly. And you can go on with your day and you can work on other things.
Absolutely. So, yes, there's, always the catch 22. Do you spend more or do you make more? And from my point of view, the difference that I can make isn't worth it to know that I've got a product that is an all-in-one solution, both local and cloud. Hardware is taken care of if you keep it under support. And you've got, 24/7 tech support behind you to take care of it.
Well, and depending on your company and depending on your typical client size, we've been able to close deals with the Dotto solution that we would not have been able to close if we were still doing StorageCraft and building our own. Some of our clients with IT departments that are larger, they want a name brand. They want that support in place. So it's not even a matter of it costing more to buy this solution. We wouldn't even be talking.
Right.
So I'm 100% behind you on that one. And we keep putting more out there and I don't see a stop anytime soon.
So here's another thing that I did not this past year when Michael went through, but the year before, and I can't remember the storm name because we get so many. When Dotto first announced that they were sending out their, I don't even know what they called it, their storm team, where they were sending out
recovery truck.
The recoveries, right, with backup devices and, you know, data networking units. I actually sent that out to customers as a marketing. And if you listen to the last show and you know me as No Marketing Marv, I have to eat crow and say I did actually do that. I sent that Datto email to some of my customers and saying, you know, this is why I got you to use Datto. Because when trouble happens, this company is going to be there to support you. And I got a couple of people that are like, thank you, you know, stuff like that. But most of them, but it was just, again, something where I could say, look, you're not just paying for backup. You're paying for so much more.
That's 100%. If anyone that's attended the early Datto cons, and by early, I mean, not this year, but previous years, they used to show a slideshow of the people sleeping at the office who hadn't showered in days, who were there during the storm, sleeping on the floor in their sleeping bags, so that they could man support because their office was snowed in and they couldn't, if they left, they wouldn't have been able to you know, to get back in. Mm,
yeah.
They're a very dedicated company.
They are. They are. All right. So we spent a good bit of time on Datto there. But I just thought that I don't get to talk about Datto a lot. A lot of the listeners here, we've got a few people that are on the Dattos, but I think that there is the hurdle of once you get your first customer on Datto, then you can just really start to roll out. And once you see it, it's a great product.
Without giving away prices, the cost of getting in on an Alto for a single server solution is really not that bad.
For the Alto, yes, not at all. Not at all. So I mentioned previous show, and I want to ask you a question.
Shoot.
So I was on a show with Mike Smith where I was in Orlando, and we got to talking about a couple of things. And I remember you sending me an email.
I think I remember sending it.
And I believe, was it the phrase that you were so disappointed? What was the, oh, I wish I should have popped it up here so I could talk about it. And because we had talked about hard drives where Mike, you know, sells all his systems with SSDs now.
Yep.
And I forget what the topic was, but it wasn't on hard drives. And I made the comment that I'm not so worried about selling systems with spinning drives. The new systems for most of my customers work just fine with spinning drives. But if we do an upgrade where somebody's hard drive is starting to fail, or we're doing an upgrade, or they say it's slow, all of those systems get solid state drives. But you made fun of me for that.
Yeah, I'm running a cult over here. We're accepting new members, and it's the SSD only cult. We don't believe, you know, we deny the existence of spinning drives. On every managed client, I'm going to preface by saying, you know, when I say managed clients, I'm talking about my regular client base. With every one of those, we haven't sold a single server, laptop, or desktop that has a spinning drive in 2 years. Now, in full disclosure, we do have some, oh, we need a cheap computer for out in the shop that's not going to move around or whatever, for a break fix customer. Yeah, okay. They'll get a spinner just because it's just not possible to hit the price. However, servers haven't sold a single server with spinning hard drives in 2 years. The only thing that I think you would probably call close is I had a customer who's a, they're break fixed, but they buy Office 365. Actually, no, they're more like procurement and Office 365 is what they buy for us. The IT manager there, he needed a 100 terabyte, NAS for video storage.
Okay.
Well, I did sell him like 10 terabyte hard drives in like a 12-day NAS or something. So I'm not counting that. So outside of that, everything else, 3 terabyte file server, all flash storage, 5 terabyte server with a bunch of VMs, all flash storage. The one I just told you about, that one was 2 terabytes of storage, all flash. Now to be clear, there's lots of different SSDs you can buy for servers. We're using either entry-level or mainstream SATA SSDs. If you look at a price sheet for Lenovo or HP, they're priced not much more than 15K SAS, and the performance, oh, the performance. But yeah, even on the desktops and laptops, we're seeing 10, 20 times performance gains. I'm very disappointed that you're still selling spinning drives. I'd like you to stop.
Well,
this is a formal request.
So just to let you know, I do have my largest law firm where they have committed that all new systems, SSDs.
That's a really good start.
You know, it's slowly happening. And they're actually a customer that I just sent over a job quote for their terminal server, solid state drives.
There we go. Now, let me ask you this, though.
Okay.
Is the problem that you feel they need more data? Because, I mean, we were pushing 128 gig SSDs at one point and just telling them they have to put everything on the server. Now, our standard is 256 in a laptop and 512 in a desktop.
So here was my reasoning for, let's go with servers. Okay. One of the reasons for servers was when solid state drives first came out, the way that they failed was traumatic. I mean, no warning, just clink, stop, whatever.
Okay.
So I have always been a proponent of SAS drives in servers. No SATA in servers, only SAS. And for the most part, that has always been acceptable to most of my clients. Now, in workstations, probably storage was key because I've got in most of my clients, they do store a lot of stuff on their desktop. Now, all of the important stuff goes to server. And I still have a lot of servers compared to most technicians with a company my size or smaller. You know, I've got, 50 servers still out there for my small business clients. Most techs probably would say, no, just, put them on a NAS and in the cloud. But my law firms need servers for their case management system. But they're still doing a ton of stuff where they'll get, 300-page PDFs, that are, hundreds of megs each. And then they'll get a DVD of, case files, discovery materials that they've got to utilize on their desktops. So from that perspective, 500 gig drives are a minimum. Some of them are 1 terabyte. So of course, the cost of a 1 terabyte drive to an end user, when they're price sensitive, does make a big deal when you're talking $200 to $300.
Now, what about redirected folders? Or is there just not enough space on the server to be putting all this stuff?
Well, there's not enough space on the server, and some of the programming doesn't work with the redirection. So for instance, if you're talking roaming profiles with their entire app data folder.
No. We do documents, desktop,
download.
Depending on the client, maybe some of the other stuff. And once in a while app data, depending on the client. But generally speaking, it's really desktop, which people think is a documents folder, and documents, which is actually a documents folder and usually doesn't have as much data as the desktop.
Of course not.
Because reasons.
Because I can see it on the desktop.
Sure. So, I understand that as much as I understood the customer that used the recycling bin
as a file system. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So yeah. I do have customers now that are okay now with spending that extra money for the solid state drive because they do see the difference in performance. Which is funny because I actually, for one of my law firms, as sad as this is, I'm actually, for the first time, selling refurbished systems with solid state drives.
Okay. So,
to keep their price down for this
week. You're easing into me there by telling me solid state drives in the same sentence as refurbished.
I know. It was just something where it was weird. It was just weird. It was kind of like, they wanted the solid state drives, but when I quoted them the complete new system, it was like, oh, really? But I found these refurbs that they're really only a year old. So it's not like they're 3, 4, 5 year old refurbs. This is a last year's model. Okay. So I have to call them refurbs because they got installed with Microsoft refurb software. But they're actually good systems. Core i7, 16 gigs, and I threw in a new, Samsung 500 gig solid state drive. And for what they're going to do, it's actually the person is going to be working remotely. So it's not like they're doing desktop serious stuff. So all she's doing is remoting in to a workstation at the office. So That's what I did.
I definitely see the direction to it. And the more you can offload onto the server and the less you have on the desktop, the less the desktop matters anyway.
Right.
It's when you're relying on that desktop, and if it goes down, it has special software that is nowhere else. That's when it's a problem.
So that'll be the test. So this one server that I quoted is actually a terminal server.
Perfect.
Or RDS.
Yep.
So it's only got, it's got a 1.8 SATA system in it. And
that's the SSD one, all right?
Yes, that's the SSD. We're loading it up with, let's see, that one's only 64 gigs, I think, 64 gigs of RAM. But because of the fact that it's an RDS, and I've got to do the Microsoft volume licensing for Office, the quote is for $27,000.
Oh, nice deal. Two things I wanted to touch on there. One, Office 365 you can do on a terminal server as long as you're using Pro Plus or an E3 license, as an FYI, in case anyone didn't know that. That makes it, for some people, if they like Office 365, it works. If they're a typical customer that wants volume licensing, that's different. But cost-wise, it makes a lot of sense to do that. And the second thing was, you mentioned earlier about the SSDs and them suddenly dying. We actually typically do RAID 5 or RAID 6 for SSDs. Mm-hmm. So we get the same benefit that you'd have on spinning drives. You know, we can have a drive die. The rebuild time, though, is a lot faster on an SSD array than it is on a spinning
drive. That is true. That is true. So I did toy with the idea of RAID 5 on this. It's only RAID 1.
And listen, we just deployed one for a law server on Monday, and it was 2 960 gig SSDs in RAID 1. So I'm not against the RAID 1. I'm just saying what we were doing historically to address the concern you had is we use 3 480 gig drives in RAID 5.
Right.
The reason why we did the 2 960s on this one is because in order to do RAID 5, I have to buy a higher end RAID controller with battery backup.
Yes.
Capacitor with the, what do they call it now? The capacitor thing. So they're just more money. So anyway, it ended up being a lot cheaper to do the RAID 1.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned the 365. The other downside, this customer is actually, they actually got on hosted exchange.
Okay.
So, and because they're so many users, and at the time, there were a couple of things with stuff like litigation hold and things like that, which Office 365 now offers all of that.
Right.
But the problem is to migrate them.
And you could use, if you do Office, I have customers on Office 365 Pro Plus with no email. Mm-hmm. They just have the programs. I don't want to quote you the price because I'll quote you in
Canadian dollars.
Monopoly money. But basically, it's not very expensive. I'm just going to throw a number out there. I think it's around $10 or something like that a month. It's just Office. So you don't even need to move their domain or anything like that. You can just leave it as, client.onmicrosoft.com or whatever. And they just have to log in with that. The only thing that gets a little weird is like their email won't automatically, how it normally automatically pops up and fills in and stuff like that, because you have free spouse 365 and you download it from the portal and you open it, it defaults. But who cares? No big deal. Really simple. So just something to consider.
Yeah.
It's fairly inexpensive, and then you get your recurring revenue forever and don't have to worry about calling and selling something again in 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that'll happen. So all right. So my life goes on.
I think you mentioned something. You were talking about that show earlier. You did say something that I had redeemed you. You told Mike how it is when it came to
managed switches.
Managed switches.
Yeah, you like that. Your title of that email is redeemed. It's what
you said to know. Apparently, I should have listened a little further before I wrote the email, but I was just so hostile after hearing about the spinning drives. I needed to
Don't type angry.
I didn't wait till the morning before hitting send.
So, I was telling him, and I've always told everybody. Now, granted, I think it's easier for people to hear me talk about it because of my network testers. That, I want to know that when I walk into one of my clients, I simply plug in my testers and I have that information. I don't even have to log into anything to see if there's, errors on the network. And if I want to, trace route, do a path analysis to something, see what's on the network that shouldn't be there, I can do all of that by just plugging in. And now there's so many other things you can do with managed switches. And, you know, we're getting into environments now where we've got to segment out customers, you know, from my HIPAA clients, my law firms. I actually have one that I've got to, over the next 2 weeks, we've got to put together a security policy for them, because now they have to adhere to HIPAA-like policies, and we've got to do all that. So we've got to, you know, VLAN their stuff out now. Okay. And so I'm going to be upgrading. They have a smart managed switch.
Okay.
But now I'm going to literally do an upgrade to a full managed switch. I don't think I have to do much else. But the fact that, you know, I have to VLAN them out now, you know, it's a no-brainer that they understand, okay, we need the better stuff.
Right. So, well, and if you end up getting, you know, those environments get really complicated, you want to start doing, you know, layer three switching, so you can do routing on the switch,
yeah,
and then you don't have to go back to the firewall. I don't understand, like, I unmanaged switches, that's just another thing. If I go into a client and I find random unmanaged switches hiding underneath desks, that just drives me so insane. I like to know what's plugged into the network. I like to be able to control that. For a lot of our environments, we'll turn off, or in Cisco language, it'd be called sticky ports, where basically you plug in a device, the device then associates with that port. And if somebody unplugs that and decides to plug in, oh, I don't know, a spare access point they brought from home, it just won't work. It'll only allow that MAC address through. And, you know, sometimes switches may not be in a proper network room, you know, with a proper, I don't know about you, but I've got clients where, sure, the servers might be in one spot all secure, but maybe the networking equipment is in some weird closet where the ISP brought the stuff in originally.
Of course. Yeah.
And so what security do I have on those switches? Well, this. If somebody walks up and starts plugging in, it just won't work. And in fact, we've been called before by a phone company because they couldn't figure out why they couldn't get it to work when they just plugged in. And this is the same phone company that was broadcasting DHCP on our network alongside our DHCP server.
So, all right. So you mentioned that. So are you doing actual full ACL on,
yeah, so,
for, yeah, desktops, any device that plugs in, you're doing full ACL. So you're doing,
depending on the client, yes,
access control. So for folks that don't realize that, you can set up so that only a allowable list of MAC addresses can get an IP address and be on that network. Now, we're used to that with Wi-Fi, but I doubt very many techs will do it on the local network.
We take security very seriously, and it depends on the client. You know, a client, you know, I'll joke and say, like, a pet groomer doesn't have the same security concerns as an aerospace firm.
Right. So, well, I'm moving in that direction, you know, with definitely a couple of my clients where we are segmenting. I mean, to the point where even my customer that, you know, had their voice over IP system before I took them over, which is literally on the same network as their desktops, I was able to switch them over to Ruckus on their wireless, mm-hmm, and we VLAN'd out their private wireless, their guest wireless, and they actually have a third wireless for, they've got these smart boards for, oh, for advertising that's, yep, controlled by another company, and we put them on their own network with access hours from 12 midnight to 6 a.m. for their updating. They don't have access during the day unless they call me. So we did that for them. But now I'm going to go back in. I've just put in some new layer three switches there, and we're going to actually VLAN their phones and do QoS on that because they complain about the quality. And they're a HIPAA client.
Oh,
so okay. I should do the ACL for them.
It's honestly, you just have to have an understanding with the client of their goals. And if their goals are to be secure, it's one of the things that you check off. You mentioned the guest networks. That, like, I don't consider that optional anymore. In fact, we do an internal network for clients by default. We do a guest network for people by default, which has, you know, we limit the speeds. We lock down everything, no torrenting, you know, like all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then the other network we do now is we're starting to do IoT networks. And IoT networks, unfortunately, have to be kind of pruned back on the security. So we don't let them give that out as a guest network. But if they want to have their thermostat or their, you know, smoke alarms or
iPhone,
whatever.
iPhone for their Spotify music.
Well, anything that we don't trust, it goes on that network. And what we found, here's an example, the Nest thermostat requires AP isolation be turned off. So we normally turn it on. So in case anyone's not familiar with that, basically we don't let one wireless device talk to another wireless device.
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't think that's secure. But the Nest requires it. So on the IoT network, that's off. We just set the speed really low, like 1-2 megabits. Why does your Nest thermostat need gigabit? It doesn't.
So I had a customer. So this customer, that's my HIPAA client that we're finally, they're finally going HIPAA after they wanted their MIPS dollars, but they didn't want to, put in the security. I'm like, okay, well, that ain't going to happen. So now we're doing all this stuff and I just lost my train of thought. What were we just talking about?
We're talking about the AP isolation. We're talking about Wi-Fi wireless.
Yes. So one of the reasons that they got on board with HIPAA is because the product is called EasyDerm. So it's a dermatologic laser and surgery center. And so they have their app on their iPads that they walk around where they can use the iPads to take the pictures, do the patient management on there. They can actually print out, radiology tickets. There's a ton of stuff they can do for there. Then they decided to get these Wi-Fi Dymo-like label printers. I think they're brothers. So that they could, print from the iPad to the brother. And then they want to print their fee tickets to the copier and all of this stuff. So I said, okay, we've got to really lock all this down, because they were of the mind that they just wanted to have patients be able to get in on their Wi-Fi, check into Facebook and, have their stuff, but they didn't want to give out separate, they didn't want to do a separate password. And I'm like, no, you have to do that. So when we first set up the new Wi-Fi, I put a limit, I think of something like 5 megs for their iPad stuff. And they had an issue where they called their EasyDerm person, and the person's like, okay, well, what's your Wi-Fi speed? And so they did the Wi-Fi test on their iPad, and they're like, oh, it's 5 up and 5 down. He's like, oh, that's horrible. You have horrible internet. You need to. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. They don't have terrible internet. They have 100 meg fiber. I'm limiting their Wi-Fi. So you tell me, what do they need to be able to run your app? Because that's all I'm giving them.
That's the way to do it. Some of the line of business vendors,
And then they wanted to have access to all of this stuff. And I'm like, no. And so their guest network, I have the client isolation on for that. For their smart boards, I have the client isolation on that. I had to turn it off on their private because, they have to be able to see the printers and stuff like that. Which, when you do that, you got to lock it down.
Yep. So let me ask you this. What speed ended up being the acceptable speed?
It was 15.
15?
Yes.
Okay. That's not unreasonable.
And the reason is, apparently, when they take these pictures, they have to upload them, and their pictures are pretty big. So if they're uploading, 10, 15 pictures that are, 5 to 10 megs each, they want to be able to get that up. So I can live with that.
You mentioned the requirements, the line of business vendor going off on the client. Let me ask you this, not to go too far off topic, but don't you get concerned when these people who tell you to turn off security on everything, open everything up, and turn off firewalls, want to move the product into their cloud?
Oh, yeah.
How warm and fuzzy do you feel about that?
Warm and fuzzy? Really? I actually told a vendor that if they were to make any suggestions similar to that ever again, that I would personally make sure that they were not in use by my client.
Somebody's got to do something because,
So here's the thing. So I have a customer that had to do some sort of remote scanning. So their application went, they were, They had a local server in the beginning, and then it went to a cloud server, but everything was still local and handled by us. And their app was, you know, installed to the desktop, but it actually went out to their server.
Okay.
So now this third iteration of their product, they actually have to RDP into a server.
Okay.
To work on that application. So as part of that, they have to install this remote scanning software if they want to scan and upload to the terminal server.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, no big deal. So as they're describing this to me, because I had them tell me everything that needed to be done so I could vet it before I signed off on it, as soon as they started talking, they talked about setting up a VPN to their server and doing this. And I'm like, excuse me, hang on. Did you say VPN? And that you want to be in charge of it? I don't think so. And then they were like, oh, well, no, we don't have to do that. I'm saying, you're not going to do that.
That's, you know,
Then to make that remote scanning software work, they wanted the end users to be local admins.
Oh, great. That's a great idea.
And I said, not a chance. And how did you get to sign your HIPAA agreement, BAA, by saying that you'll have local administrators for all users?
The thing with local administrators is that's now your problem. That's not their problem.
No, of course.
And so that, you know, that I don't like, but at least that I'm like, okay, I see what you're doing there. But it's the ones where, and you know, we've dealt with them before where on the server, it's, oh yeah, no, this folder needs, you know, read, write everyone, you know, share open, not locked down at all. The firewall needs all these ports open, or better yet, turn it off. And then that same vendor says, we should move this stuff into our cloud. It's like, that's how you operate on premise. How can I possibly trust you when
cloud.
I can't actually see what you're doing?
Right. You know? Yeah. So we have an interesting time ahead of us because we're going to get a lot more of that.
I agree. We've been trying to, I wouldn't say reinvent ourselves, but we are definitely breaking new ground and definitely getting creative and coming up with new strategies to deal with the new world environment that I'm finding us in. Because the old days of stick a server in, roll out a bunch of desktops and laptops, have a nice day. You know, if we thought bring your own device was bad with like a phone, with all these, you know, line of business vendors and the way they're going, look at QuickBooks, they're into it rather, is a good example. They're all cutting us out. We used to sell QuickBooks.
Yeah.
Now you can't sell QuickBooks online. So a lot of revenue streams are driving up and you need to figure out something new.
Well, it's not even just the revenue streams. It's the fact that the audacity that they have of thinking that they'll just come into the network and do what they want without even asking.
Oh, I totally agree with you there. Only thing I meant with the revenue stream was if we can't find a way to adequately, you know, provide for ourselves, we're not going to be there for our clients. Oh. They're going to be left with these kind of vendors. And I was talking us in a, you know, as providers as opposed to.
Well, we thought that with Office 365, you know, and, when you know, Microsoft said, well, and you know, how are we going to compete selling Office 365?
Office 365, I mean, if you're, I guess this is probably a good tip for any listeners. If you can become a silver partner, there's a competency you can pass. And as of last year, it was 8% additional CSP margin. It's now 6%. But that's still on top of the base margin you're getting from your distributor. That really adds a good chunk. And yeah, you're not going to get rich if you have a bunch of two-person, three-person firms with Exchange Online. But if you start getting some E3s or some Microsoft 365 business licenses out there, you know, and some decent sized accounts or a bunch of small accounts, it actually adds up. It's not bad. And then don't forget to add your Datto Backupify to back up your Office 365.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is, you know, good for you, good for the client.
It is.
And we're seeing email security becoming a thing again. For a while, we were kind of breathing easy with the Office 365 Direct, but the amount of viruses that are coming through, we're now.
So have you been adding on additional protection for
the
365
last couple of years?
We started
using the Microsoft ATP stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were working with that. We've actually recently started using email laundry. I don't know, am I supposed to be, if I'm name dropping vendors? Yeah. So we use email laundry.
We don't care here. We name, you don't name care drop here? Okay. Whoever we want.
Whoever. Okay. Well, so yeah, so we're using email laundry. We're buying it through ConnectWise. Per seat pricing, it's not the cheapest one out there, but the thing is, if I want cheap, I'll just use the built-in Office 365 stuff because it's not bad.
Right.
Whereas an on-premise Exchange server, we were finding would get, let's just make up some numbers. You'd get 100 bad emails a day. With Office 365, we're finding you're getting 10. And with this, we're finding you're getting like 2. And by bad, I don't mean viruses. We haven't actually had a single one.
All right. And that's called email laundry.
Yeah, email laundry. So that's, I rather like it. It's extremely simple. There's not a lot of configuration involved. And I've had to use support a couple of times, and they've been very responsive. So I have nothing but good things to say about it at this point.
All right. I'm going to put that in the show notes. And I know that you don't listen to all my shows, but
generally,
App River guy here. So I use all the App River products with the Office 365 Exchange, Secure Mail, the protection that they have. So I'm all aboard with App River. Although, always have a customer that may not be on that App River bandwagon. So always can look at something else. So the email laundry.
Yep. That's it. I have nothing bad. I've heard great things about App River. But we do our CSP through Pax8. And then, like I said, we've added on the email laundry backup plan.
Pax8.
It's been good for us. The margins are great anyway.
I got to, they're sending me a ton of email right now.
They're really good. Tell them I sent you. I'll get a gift card.
I'm already signed up with them. I actually signed up with them like 3 years ago. I just don't do anything there. And somebody tried to friend me on the LinkedIn from Pax8.
Do you think a lot of your listeners use ConnectWise?
Short answer. If I had to put a percentage on it, I don't know, 10% use ConnectWise.
Well, then I'll throw this out there for the 10%. One of the biggest reasons why we went to Pax8 from TechData we were using before is they have a tool that lets you actually sync your agreements directly from the Pax8 portal into ConnectWise, and they provide that at no cost. So instead of having to go in and build out your billing and everything, it's all done automatically. And when I make changes, it automatically updates my monthly billing for me.
Ah, okay.
And ConnectWise has a tool they'll try to sell you to do that. Which is, it works great from what I understand. However, this costs zero. You have to use Pax8, obviously.
Okay, but that's still based on doing the CSP with the Microsoft Silver competency.
Sorry. So without the Silver, you still get your, I don't know, sorry, Pax8, you can get 16 points if you've got the right, if you're a member of ASCII, you get 16 points.
Okay.
On top of the 16 points, you can get an additional 6 points for being Silver.
Okay. All right.
And I understand that may not make sense for everybody, but if you have enough seats, it'll actually pay for your Silver membership.
All right. Sounds interesting. I may take a look at that. And Pax8, if you're listening, don't call me till after the start of the year, please. I got a busy holiday season coming up. So, all right. Pax8 and ConnectWise. I'll have to make a note of that. They probably don't have a link to that, so I probably can't throw that out there. So you must be a Pax8 customer using ConnectWise.
Yeah, I heard they were building on an Autotask one as well. I'm sure there's some Autotask people out there. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I can't comment on it. I just don't know anything about it, if it exists or whatever. But the ConnectWise one works really good. It's terrific. It saves us tons of time.
Okay. All right. Well, Chad, we hit a lot of stuff there. We're coming up on the hour mark, so why don't we start to wrap up here? But before I do, I just want to ask, did you have any notes that came up earlier that you wanted to hit that we skipped over or we took a left turn and didn't get back to?
I think I'd just like to throw this 365 story out real quick if you want.
Okay, sure.
We did a migration a while ago, not that long ago, for a client. And after the migration, about a month later, one of the users called and said that they weren't getting emails from one person. And we did a bunch of research. And then we thought, you know what, we'd go check the old provider because for some reason they didn't get rid of the mailbox. And sure enough, there was the mail. My hunch was that the old provider hadn't removed the mailbox. Now, how that could get through when the MX records were all set up correctly, I had another theory, which proved to be true, and that was that the customer's person that was emailing my customer had an account, a mail account, on the same server that the customer used to be on. So we contacted this host.
The sender had a mailbox on the same server, but they were two different domains.
Two different domains, not at all related. Just the same. It just so happened they used the same. And it wasn't like a GoDaddy, but it wasn't a nobody either. It was like one of those, you know, mid-size, you know, web hosting companies.
Oh, a regional
kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. So they basically, it was big enough that it wasn't totally a coincidence, but still, it was on the same server. It had to be on the same server. So basically, when we called them, we're like, come on, guys. Like, you know, we migrated off. You were supposed to, like, remove this stuff. Please delete our customer's domain. Delete everything. So then we get called, and the customer says that no longer are they going to the old mailbox, but they're bouncing. Yeah. We're like, okay, well, I'm like, I know what they did.
And we know what that is.
I said, they deleted the mailbox, but not the domain. And sure enough, that's what they did. So they just deleted the user's mailbox and didn't bother. I'm like, why won't you purge everything?
But here's a question, though. So we're talking old server, new server, migration. What about DNS?
Yes. Yeah, so this is the key. So we took the customer from a hosted solution with, you know, PopMail to Office 365. So our customer was on 365. We moved their DNS from wherever they were over to our stuff, we'll just call it. Okay. So anybody on the internet sending this client emails had no problem. The client could send email, receive email, only from people on that physical host.
Oh.
And it turned out that it just so happened that somebody they did business with was on that host.
Wow. So that host had DNS records on that server, and wow.
They literally had the domain was still set up. So on the off chance that a listener ever comes across that, just remember that it's probably on the same physical host and they need to delete the domain. And as a aside, we couldn't do that because when we logged in, we were only like a user. We weren't like the reseller or the, you know, admin.
Of course.
So we needed them to actually delete the domain.
But here's my question. Did you have to walk them through how to do it?
Because
I've had to do that. I've had to tell a mail server provider how to go into their own product and change records. And
I wasn't the one who did the call. It was one of my techs. And when they brought this to me as an original thing where they were stumped because they said, how in the world could like the mail be? And I said, no. I have an idea.
Oh my.
But anyway, I haven't seen that happen in 20 years. So I thought that'd be interesting.
All right. Well, there's your, I don't even know what to call that segment. We need to have a, you know, weird story of the week or something like that.
That'll fit.
All right. My favorite Canadian. Oh, wait a minute.
Canadian, aren't I?
No, I have other Canadian friends. I just got to make sure that
they're not going to listen, or that we're not going to be offended.
Well, trust me, I offend somebody every week. Don't know how, but I do. And Corey, love you, man. So, do that. So Chad, thank you, my friend. And for those of you listening, we spared you the political drama that we were talking about before the show, and just pray for Florida, I guess, is the best way to say it.
We're cheering for you.
Hope to be done by Christmas is all I can say.
Take your time.
All right, so for Chad Kemp, and just for our listeners who don't know you, Chad, tell them where you're at and what you do. And if you want anybody to get in touch with you ever.
Yeah, sure. I'm on LinkedIn at Chad Kemp, K-E-M-P-T. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. I'm generally pretty friendly. I get out in the community a fair bit.
Generally?
Generally. That's going to be the word of the week. We didn't do a big intro. If anyone doesn't know who I am, I've been in business 20 years. We're a managed service provider just outside of Toronto in Canada. and we have six employees. Run a nice little business up here.
Yes, for those of you that may not know, Chad and I met on a web. What, I don't even know what that was called. We were on a panel on a. I don't even remember the name of the show now.
Jetpack.
IT Jetpack.
Web TV series. That was great.
It was a good little show, and it was basically. The way I'll remember the name was MSP, Man in the Van versus the MSP. And Chad thought that I was this little ponytail, trunch slamming pizza tech.
You know what? I honestly, you definitely changed my opinion of that. And then after I knew you, I then met our I believe mutual friend Stan. And you guys have really changed my opinion on the one man operation. You guys do things I never thought were possible.
Well, give a man a chance. And I have to tell you this off the air. I can't say it on the air because it's
it's really good, guys. You're gonna miss out. Though. Sorry.
It is nice, but I don't want to offend anybody else. So before I do that, I want to say thank you for downloading. And listening to this show, you've been listening to Pod Nuts Pro. My guest today, Chad Kempt, the angry Canadian, as I would call him, who generally is a nice guy most of the time. And remember, folks, go look at the show notes. I'll have the stuff that we talked about in there, especially this email laundry that he talked about. I will probably try to do a quick look for some stuff on Pax8 and ConnectWise. But I definitely will have a link into my Amazon page that I'll ask you to go and support the show by purchasing your things through Amazon, as you normally do. Just start there with my link and some proceeds will come back so that I can do generally good shows from him or here on out. So again, thank you, folks, and we'll be back soon for another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. And until then, holla.